So this morning, reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhurya chapter 19, the Lord instructs Sri Rupa Goswami. Today, one text, text 143. So this verse is 17 syllables long in the Sanskrit per line, which is probably beyond my ability to chant comprehensively. So maybe see microphone. Okay, so maybe someone can chant the Sanskrit. You can do the word for word first, and maybe if no one, then we'll just depend upon Madhumatini. So synonyms: aparimita, unlimited in number; dhruva, eternal; tanuvritya, who have accepted material bodies; yadi, if; sarvaga, sarvagata, all pervading; tarhi, then; na, not; shashyata, controllable; iti, thus; niyama, regulation; Yuva, O Supreme Truth, Na, Not, Itarata, Itarata. In another manner, Ajani, having been born, shall end. Yatamayam, consisting of which, tat that, avimucha, having, without giving up, niyanta, controller, avet, may become, samam, equal in all respects, anujanatan, of those who follow this philosophical calculation, yet that, amatam, amatam, not conclusive, ata dustaya, by faulty calculations. So,
Aparimita dhruvas tanuvrita jodi sarvagatas.
Aparimita dhruvas tanuvrita
tarhi na sasseti niyama dhruva netarata.
Tarhi na sasseti niyama dhruva netarata.
Ajani cha janmayam tad abhimaccho niyatri bhavet. Samam manujatam jad amatam mato distataya. Aparimita dhruvastana vrita jodi sarvagatas. Tarhi na sasete tiniyama dhruvanetarata. Ajani cha janmayam tadam abhimoccha niyantri bhave. Samam anujatanam tat jat amatam adustataya.
Yeah.
Thank you. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. O Lord, although living entities who have accepted material bodies are spiritual and unlimited in number, if they were all pervading, there would be no question of their being under your control. If they are accepted, however, as particles of the eternally existing spiritual entity, as part of you, who are the Supreme Spirit Whole, we must conclude that they are always under your control. If the living entities are simply satisfied with being identical with you as spiritual particles, then they will be happy being controllers of so many things. The conclusion that the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are one and the same is a faulty conclusion. It is not a fact. Om Agyanata Marandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurimutam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. So this verse from purport. Did I read the purport? Purport's one line. I think I didn't read it. Forgive me. Purport. This verse, which is also from Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.30, is spoken by the personifying Vedas. So this verse in purport are part of Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sri Rupa Goswami on the nature of reality. Nature of reality is the subject matter of the Vedanta Sutra. So in the Vedanta Sutra is commentated on by all schools of Vedantic thought. The Gaudiya Vaishnava commentary being what? Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary, but then the commentary when there were challengers to Gaudiya Vaishnavas? Paladev Vijayabhushan. Govinda Bhashya. So all the sampradayas, Vaishnava sampradayas, and Mayavadi sampradayas comment on Vedanta Sutra to establish their view of the ultimate reality. And so we find in this verse a discussion of the ultimate reality in terms of the living entities and the Supreme Lord. How do these two elements of the ultimate reality relate to one another in a way consistent with other aspects of Vedantic philosophy or other aspects of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Achanta Veda Vedatva philosophy? So I'd like you to, I want to just present very briefly different conceptions of reality represented by Shankara, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about the nature of reality. So to do this, I learned from Radhika Raman Prabhu, our devotee philosopher, a model or a conception, philosophical, what I want to say, it's a device to help understand the truth. Philosophical device, let's call it, which helps to place these various philosophers next to each other so that we can compare their conclusions about the nature of the absolute truth. So that conception is a spectrum. If we can imagine a spectrum which on one end has Shankaracharya's Mayavad philosophy, Advaita philosophy, non-dualism philosophy, and on the other end of the spectrum is Dvaita or dualism, the Supreme Lord and the Living Entity. So we have this spectrum, and so how can we understand these different philosophies by comparing them? Well, if we start with Shankaracharya, we have his Advaita Vedanta. Advaita Vedanta propounds what, Mary? Simply, what does it propound? Monism, yes. Advaita. Yes, Advaita. Advaita Vedanta. Monism. That there's no difference between the living entity and the supreme ultimate reality of Brahman. So this is Shankaracharya's philosophy. And Vaishnava sampradayas and philosophers such as Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya and ultimately Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have dedicated considerable amount of time and thought and writings in challenging and defeating this Advaita Vedanta of Shankaracharya. So how do they go about doing this? And again, this is just a very simple presentation that relates to the verse that we read today where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in talking to Rupa Goswami, is talking about the living entity, the spiritual spark, and their relationship to the absolute truth. So Shankaracharya says they're identical. But the Vaishnava philosophers, Madhva and Ramanuja, differ from him significantly. So perhaps the most vehement arguments against this Advaita philosophy are put forward by Madhvacharya. Actually, I was listening to Radhika Raman, and he explains that when you read the text, the Sanskrit text, the work of these philosophers, Madhvacharya is vociferous in his calling out and pointing out the defects in Shankaracharya's philosophy, and very strongly preaches against him. His philosophy is entitled, does anybody know? Yes, Dvaita Vedanta, or two. You see the famous picture of him where he's sitting and he's holding his hand like this. Indicate Dvaita dualism. And so here's a little description of that. Madhvacharya's insistence on the modal distinction between Atma and Brahman, wherein the former is inalterably dependent upon and therefore fundamentally different from the latter. And so Madhvacharya argues that there are two aspects of ultimate reality. The Atma, or the spirit soul, and the Supreme Brahman. Not impersonal Brahman, but Vishnu, the Supreme. And so Atma and Brahman are close, are at opposite ends of the spectrum that we're envisioning here. Sankaracharya is saying they're one. Madhvacharya is saying that they are eternally different. Dvaitism versus Advaitism. Now Ramanujacharya, his philosophical system is called the Sudha Dvaita, or qualified non-dualism. Basically, he's saying that the living entity, these individual souls remain intact, their identity remains intact even after liberation, and they share some of the essential nature of Brahman. That's the important element here, that they share some element in Brahman. Madhvacharya is very strong against kicking out any connection, any identification with Brahman. And there's a clear distinction, Dvaita. But Ramanuja, and so he would be on the other end of the spectrum. So we have Sankaracharya on one end, Madhvacharya on the other. And then in between, somewhere in between along that spectrum, we find Ramanuja's persistent Dvaita, or qualified non-dualism. It means non-dualism, again, is at the end of the spectrum. So if we come a little bit down the spectrum, we get qualified non-dualism that allows some identification with Brahman. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his philosophy is Achintya Bhedabhe Tattva, where he accepts that there's duality, not the Advaita philosophy, but it's inconceivable how the living entity can be identified with Brahman, but not consumed by an impersonal understanding. That the living entity is one and different from Brahman, from the Supreme Lord. So it's a synthesis. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy is a synthesis of these different philosophies, and therefore our acharyas have presented this philosophy, Achintya Bhedabhe Tattva, the inconceivableness of oneness and difference of the living entity with the Supreme Absolute Truth. And so it's just the life work of the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, particularly the Goswamis, and amongst them, in particular, Jiva Goswami, to present this Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta on the nature of reality. The nature of reality is that the living entity is simultaneously one with and different from the far end of the spectrum here, where we had Shankara's complete identification of the soul, individual soul and Brahman, and the opposite end, where there's no connection, according to Madhvacharya, of the no conclusion to destruct this duality of the Lord and the living entity. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu synthesizes the entire spectrum with his philosophy of Achinta Bheda Vaitattva as the ultimate reality. So we find this in terms of the verse today, where the personified Vedas are questioning the living entity. If they were all pervading, there would be no question of their being under your control. So the living entity is under the control of the Supreme Lord, as is described in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In Vyasadeva's trance, what did he see? What did Vyasadeva see in his trance in relation to? Who were what in terms of the verse today? Who were fully under his control. So for the living entity, the jiva souls, their position is to be under the control of the Supreme Lord. And that is a philosophical argument against the idea that the soul can at any point in time become all-pervading. So the verse here says, and the personified Vedas are saying, that the living entities who have accepted material bodies are spiritual, not material, they're spiritual, and unlimited in number. If they were all-pervading, there would be no question of their being under your control. So that philosophical conclusion is being reestablished here in Lord Chaitanya's teachings of Rupa Goswami. What is the position of the living entity? They're under the control of the Supreme Lord. And if they remain there, they can be happy being controllers of so many things. So the conclusion of the verse today and these summary of philosophies is that the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that they are one and the same is a faulty conclusion. It is not a fact. So, does anyone have something to add or contribute in this discussion? I'm not a philosopher. I can't claim to understand it all. Therefore, I tried to make a simple presentation. but maybe the others can contribute to fill out the discussion.
Not so much contribute, but a question, because if we understand that Krishna is the supreme controller and controller of everything, how is it that we have control of so many things, as it said in the latter part of the sentence?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was a little confused to read that also. But if we step back and think about just the material creation, for instance, how Krishna is the supreme controller, yet he deputes controlling roles to so many, right from Brahma on down, to all the demigods, and even the Manus, so many others, they're in positions of control, but they are under the supreme controller. Like there might be so many kings who are powerful in their realms, but then there's the emperor to whom they are subordinate. So that's how I dealt with that sentence there. The sentence being that if the living entities are simply satisfied being identical with you as spiritual particles, they would be happy being controllers of so many things. Does anybody else have any thoughts on that?
Satisfying, yeah.
Madhvacharya, he went on the opposite direction of Shankaracharya. Is that because, did he come right after Shankaracharya and then Ramanuja and others came afterwards? What is the chronology? And so wondering why he went to the other end of it was more to defeat Shankaracharya or?
Well, obviously Shankaracharya, his appearance was first. He was followed, I think, by both Madhvacharya and Ramanujacharya, although I can't say which one came directly after. Do you know?
Yes, 700 AD came Vishnu Swami, 786 Shankaracharya. So Shankaracharya, 86 years later, after first Vaishnava Acharya came, the Vishnu Swami, one of the four. Then he took all Vishnu Swami's philosophy and he twisted completely. That's why there is a opposite. And then came Nimbarkacharya, then came Ramanujacharya, then Madhvacharya is the last one, 1238.
Hmm. I imagine that Madhvacharya took such a strong position out of this strong desire to rid the world of Shankaracharya's conclusions. Of course, he was a very powerful person anyway, being the incarnation of Vayu. Isn't he the one? I think someone said in class recently that he's the only Acharya who identified himself. He identifies himself as being
is a mukha pran, it's not like a regular air. Because Vayu also has a name like air, wind. He's a mukha pran, where the life sustains. Like Prabhupada said in Bhagavad Gita 2.17, that there's a five air within this body. But one air out of five is the prana, that carries the soul. And the other four is for the evacuation, you know, breathing, all kinds of other four air. But one air carries the soul to subtle body from one body to another body. So that's Mukha Pran. And then Mukha Pran came as a Hanuman, Mukha Pran came as a Madhvacharya.
Hmm. Any other? Yes?
Thank you, Shesha. So this Advaitavad is not at all bona fide, right? In the Gita, it's equated to like demoniac mentality. And also this idea that they like lose their identity upon liberation and that they merge into Brahman and they lose their like individuality. It's like something so horrible.
That's why Vaishnavacharyas have been so strong against it. It's offensive to Krishna. I didn't mean to cut you off, Guru. Oh, I said that it's offensive. And Prabhupada would say, you have no hands, you have no legs, you have no eyes. So you tell somebody that and you're insulting them. And so taking that as an understanding of the Mayavad philosophy, all the Vaishnavacharyas almost like have a personal vendetta to get rid of such demonic things. I think even in his writings, Radhik Raman said that Madhvacharya is basically comes out and calls Sankaracharya demon, you know, for representing. Pundarik?
Acharya was the incarnation of Lord Shiva. He was deputed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Shankaracharya is an incarnation of Lord Shiva. He's a Vaishnavana Mitashambhu. He's the greatest Vaishnava, actually. This is he was deputed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead for a particular purpose. Just like Lord Buddha, he preached, he decried the Vedas. He stopped the animal sacrifices by rejecting the Vedic literatures, but he's an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we worship him as such. Shankaracharya, he's also in the same, practically the same category. He's an incarnation of Lord Shiva, the greatest Vaishnava, but he preached a particular philosophy at a particular time for a particular purpose, under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who follows the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a devotee, not a demon. He reestablished the Vedic conclusions. He's an acharya, and his philosophy, although we don't accept it, is preached under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to reestablish the Vedic literatures, because without literatures, what is that? Nashtik means one who doesn't follow. Is that Buddha Hoya Nashtik?
He brought two things.
Huh?
He brought the devil back and he has submitted the Brahma.
Yeah.
But I have a very interesting point on this. After 4 decades, I just heard Prabhupada lecture. Somebody sent me a brief, you know, there's a group of Indian. So if you can just listen. This is the first time I heard Prabhupada say there are 2 types of Mayavada. So Sankara cannot be blamed the other Mayavada. If you just...
Explanation of Vedanta Sutra from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Mayavadi Sannyasi of Benares. There are 2 kinds of Mayavada.
That is a big lecture, but there's 2 kinds of Mayavada, and I traced it, the Prabhupada's lecture, and I found it. So fascinating, it relieved me. We have to have a strong respect to Shankaracharya, but the other Mayavadi, Dayananda Saraswati Prabhupada writes, his follower, who actually created this poisonous philosophy against bhakti.
That makes sense. Yeah. I'm just repeating what...
Shankaracharya did a lot of things, but Madhvacharya, when he established the philosophy, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur spoke 3 days when he was establishing the 4 acharyas deity. I'm sure you went Mayapur, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they have a four acharyas statue. No, what do you call Murti established. Yeah, four corner in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So a long time back I was reading this, I remember, when Banu Maharaj was a Prabhu, we were together in the room and we were reading, I remember, it was very interesting. Why Lord Chaitanya accepted Madhva Sampradaya? That was the question. Why did Lord Chaitanya accept Madhva Sampradaya? Why not other Sampradaya? Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that he took two things from each Sampradaya and then he has his own Sampradaya, which is, as you mentioned, Achinta Vedavara. But in that lecture, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, there are five Madhvacharya's Madhva Sampradaya. He is a Dvaitabad. Dvaitabad means there is a five eternal differences. The first eternal differences is between the Lord and the soul. And the second is there is an eternal differences between Maya or material energy and the Lord. There are eternal differences between the soul and the Maya. Means the construction of the soul has no component of Maya. We are eternally different. Then there's an eternal difference between each soul, and he gives reference from Vishnu Purana and different Purana, just to back those. And there's an eternal difference amongst each elements of the material nature. So there's a five eternal differences. And that's on that base Mahaprabhu took. But that's a Siddhanta on the Tattvagata Vichar. But on the Rasagata Vichar, Madhvacharya actually established the Krishna worship more than any other four acharyas. Because there is a Udupi Krishna is there, and there is a lot of, and the main thing is Madhavendra Puri. Madhavendra Puri comes from this Sampradaya, who actually Mahaprabhu establishes all philosophy based on Madhavendra Puri, is the root of Prema Bhakti.
Thank you. Any other points anyone has?
Not a point, but a question, and this might be another class. Maybe I'll come back again. I don't fully understand what Achinta Bheda Bheda actually means. You said Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, on that spectrum, Shankaracharya on one end, Madhvacharya on the other end, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you said, was a synthesis, is the word you used. For me, I don't fully understand what that actually means. You know, I also don't understand the phrase Achintya Veda Veda. I'd like to understand more. And also, yeah, that's it. I'd like to understand more.
Can anybody help our dear visiting Prabhu for a clear, short explanation? Of course, as you said, another class, many other classes, many years of deep study. You can understand what is Chinta Veda Tattva, but maybe one of the other devotees can succinctly present.
I like the diorama you made, one end the Shankaracharya. I never thought, I never heard the first time I heard from you. It's a wonderful thought. Whoever came, I mean, how you came up with that. So it can be actually reconciled all. Said each Veda, each energy, potency of the Lord, Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in Jagadharma, it can be understood by itself. But their union, each potency, like for an example, there's a bricks put together to make a big pillar. And if you analytically study that the whole pillar is made of bricks and all material elements. But when you think of Nrisimhadev reside there and he came out, did he just appear in the pillar from spiritual world to come out, or actually he is there everywhere in... See, this union is difficult, extremely difficult for any living being to ever grasp. That how can Nrisimhadev be in the pillar same time, there is no gap. Was not like a... Let's make a little room in the pillar so I can enter there. No, there was no such thing. The pillar was intact. And Nrisimhadev was intact. He was not trying to squeeze out of... No, he is like free. Like, that's how the pure goodness exists and modes exist simultaneously in one place. This is beyond anybody can ever figure it out. That builders. That's why Mayavad philosophy like trying to like destruct us. And there's the details. Details are given, like how to understand. That's why it says achinta. Individually we can understand. Krishna exists in Supta Sapta, pure goodness, which is beyond. Like I'm seeing you. Your body is the object of tamoguna. This object of my seeing is made of tamoguna. My seeing ability through the senses, the eyes, is the rajaguna. Then my perception to see it is sattvaguna. Is that a three modes perception or is that a pure spiritual perception? It's three modes. Now if I see you as a devotee, you are serving Srila Prabhupada's movement, you are a wonderful devotee, you have a family, you are serving the whole family, that surrender, that spiritual view. But both exist at the same time. You cannot deny, like you are not a devotee, I cannot deny that this body is not made of tamoguna. We cannot deny either. But both exist at the same time, how do you explain? So that's why it's called achinta, easy way to. And there are many examples like this.
As I said, it's a big subject matter. Paragraphs?
Is it more close to Madhvacharya philosophy? That I suppose, right?
Yes.
So the word achintya is self-explanatory, not, this is just my conjecture. The word achintya is inconceivable, so we can't really conceive it unless, until we become very spiritually advanced, then we can understand. Is that right?
Well, it's achintya, you're right.
Achintya, inconceivable. So,
but we follow the, by following our acharyas, we can gain some understanding.
And another one, a question is, can, you said there's two kinds of Mayavadis. Can you briefly just... of course. What I'm saying is, can you explain briefly the two types?
Pundarik?
You explained everything.
Okay, that's fine.
Is that okay?
Yes. Sure.
I never heard all these years.
Any other points in the minutes?
I have a question.
One.
Hare Krishna, so thank you for nice explanation. It is hard to conceive that Madhavacharya, who is a disciple of Vyasadeva, he went to see Vyasadeva and then like a speed of the wind, and then his disciple was tired, so he kicked him out and he fell back in the ashram, and he went up in the, I don't remember, maybe it was Himalayas where he sees Vyasadeva, and then he comes back, and then he went, goes to all these places like Jagannath Puri, different temples, and so it's hard to conceive, for me to hard to conceive that he appeared after Ramanujacharya. Our philosophy is Dvaita Advaita. Madhavacharya is a disciple of Vyasadeva, and he's still establishing Dvaita philosophy. Instead of, and Ramanujacharya has already appeared and disappeared. So, can you comment on the apparent discrepancy? Why didn't he directly go to Dvaita Advaita philosophy?
I don't know that I can really give an answer to that, but I think that philosophers generally build on the work of other philosophers. And so Ramanuja came and he established his Vishishta Dvaita. And I imagine, I don't know, I was putting forward for discussion, I imagine that he felt, Madhvacharya felt there was room for more philosophical comment and development, and so therefore he went to, he had his life's mission and developed different works. And again, not in that, like Ramprit points out that Vishnu Swami was the first Vaishnava commentator. So in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, when someone wanted to say they had a better commentary than Vishnu Swami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't like that idea, that pride was there. And so the idea of Madhva developing this philosophical system is not a rejection of or attempting to defeat Ramanujacharya, but providing new insight. That's what I would say. Any others? No? Pundarik, do you have any comment on it?
No? There's a book written on Mayavad Sadhu Goswami, 100 by Bhaktisiddhanta Sridhar Thakur, 100 way to defeat Mayavad philosophy. I don't know if it's the proper translation. 100 way? But no, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, he put there also two books. One for the Sahajya. Yeah, that is also there. Sata Dushan, that's right. 100 faults in Mayavad. 100 faults. That's good book. But the other also that Mahaprabhu took two things. First thing he says, Kebal Advaita Nirasan Krishnamurti Nitya Jani Tahara Sevan. The verse goes that ultimate defeat of Mayavad is taken by Mahaprabhu from Madhvacharya. So there must be, as you mentioned, there must be very significant. He said ultimate defeat of Mayavad is what Mahaprabhu took from Madhvacharya.
Okay.
That's one. And the deity Seva, anybody does any service to the deity is eternal. These two things he took from Madhvacharya.
Does that answer your question?
What bewilders me is that we had so many acharyas after Shankaracharya establishing dualism or Achintya Veda, but the seems like
no,
the,
nobody did Achintya, only Mahaprabhu.
Okay, yeah, well that's what I meant, like there was so much of that after Shankaracharya, and yet Shankaracharya's philosophy, or maybe this other person that you were saying, other impersonalist, Dayananda. It seems like it has such a effect. It's just so deep-rooted or something. Why is that the Mayavadi philosophy is so deep-rooted that even when people hear personalism, even for ourselves, we're such impersonalists in some sense, although theoretically and everything we understand and we accept, but it's the impersonalist aspect is so, seems like very deep-rooted.
Well, it's hard to explain. I'm going to explain. It's that, and it's propounded by it's propounded by at the Lord's personal desire. Well, the Lord has his plan, and so he has a plan why Shankaracharya appeared, why his philosophy is appealing. We know some of that in understanding turning back, turning the influence of Buddhism, kicking it out, and reestablishing the Vedas as part of a progression that leads to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's advent. And so there are reasons why. That's one of them. So anything else?
Can I add one funny story? Just it won't take more than a minute.
Okay.
Prabhupada was giving class in Chicago. This is I heard from Kesava Bharati Maharaj. But he was not a Maharaj that time, he was a Brahmacharya. So Prabhupada was very heavy on Mayavadi. And he was like, according to Kesava Bharati Maharaj, or Prabhu that time, he was feeling like some group in India are called Mayavadi, and it's like Prabhupada is very angry with them or something. So after the class, he told to Prabhupada, that is there a group in India like a Mayavadi, you are like very angry about it, them? Then Prabhupada looked at him and said, no, I'm talking about you. He was like shocked. So then Prabhupada said, people are born with the Mayavadis now. Now, if you, in Bhagavad Gita 4.10, in the purport, middle purport, Prabhupada said we are born with three attachments and one of them is Mayavadi. So it's invaded, as Madan Madhavati mentioned. It's invaded in our consciousness. It's horrible. So what can we do?
Yes. Mm.
Thank you very much.
Mm.
Yes, thank you very much.
Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai.